a Friday edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On today's episode, Taylor Charleston will have a feature report with Dr. Carl Wyant discussing how to properly feed soil microbes and keep them from going dormant. And then Sierra Paul Hemus joins us with a report on a study that USDA is doing to improve traceability of foodborne illnesses. I'll have a check-in of national and regional agricultural news in today's show as well, and regional news will start us off right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In regional agricultural news, in any given year, agriculture uses the largest fraction of groundwater in a state, but new findings show that empty farm fields could be the key in putting that water back underground when storms come through. During drought years, California relies heavily on its groundwater supply. As droughts become longer and more intense with climate change, it's becoming more important than ever to bank excess surface water during stormy weather patterns in order to provide some long-term insurance. That's a goal of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, which was passed in 2014. In order to meet that goal, state and local water managers need to work together to search for possible methods of recharging groundwater aquifers. And the sooner the better, because there's a lot of water missing from those basins. The amount of groundwater overdraft that has accumulated over the last couple of decades is exceeding 160 million acre feet, which is about 1.3 times Lake Tahoe, according to Dr. Helen Dahlke, a hydrology expert at the University of California, Davis. Dr. Dahlke and a team of researchers recently shared findings from their study showing how California's 8 million acres of farmland could be tapped as one way to help get water back into the ground through a process called AGMAR. AGMAR stands for Agriculture Managed Aquifer Recharge. So managed aquifer recharge is a term they use for intentionally placing more water into groundwater aquifers than would naturally occur from rainfall. With AGMAR, selected farm fields would be intentionally flooded during periods of storming weather. With such a huge groundwater deficit to make up and seemingly shrinking opportunities to take advantage of big storms, recruiting help from farmers could create big opportunity for the state to shore up the water supply for not-so-rainy days. There's over 8 million acres of farmland, so if you flood just 1 million of that with 2 feet of water or so, you could put a lot of water away, according to Dr. Dahlke. But of course, not all 8 million acres of those farm fields would be good candidates for this practice. Crops that are more sensitive to flooding should not be considered. Dr. Dahlke said that emptying of fallow fields would be ideal because it would minimize the risk of any financial loss for farmers. Fields with sandy soils would also work better than more clay-based soils because water would be able to drain through much faster. And when it comes to actually flooding fields, any farm with built-in flood irrigation would be most efficient. Otherwise, flooding would have to take place through sprinklers or drip irrigation, which takes much longer. Scientists also want to learn more about any potential water quality issues with AGMAR. Any farm field that uses a nitrogen fertilizer could pass nitrates into the water as it filters through. Those nitrates are known to have health consequences if ingested. While AGMAR is not currently being used in the Central Valley, farmers in the Tulare Basin in Southern California have been trying it out. Each summer, farmers there register fields for AGMAR purposes so the district knows where to send any excess water ahead of time. There are signs that the practice is working in that area. Dr. Dahlke would like to see that eventually expand farther north. California water rights holders are required by state law to measure and report the water they divert from surface streams. For people who wish to take the water measurements themselves, the University of California Cooperative Extension is offering a virtual training to receive certification on May 26. At the workshop, participants can expect to understand what meters are appropriate for different situations, learn how to determine measurement equipment accuracy, developing an understanding of measurement weirs, and learn how to calculate and report volume from flow data. The workshop is limited to 30 people a session. The scheduled trainings will be held on Thursday, March 26th at two locations. One location is Reading at Shasta College Farm. Registration is required. It does cost $25. For more information, you can register on the Reading at Shasta Farm College website. The other location is Woodland at the UC Cooperative Extension. Registration is $20, and you can register on the Woodland at the UC Cooperative Extension website. Senate Bill 88 requires all water rights holders who have previously diverted or intend to divert more than 10 acre feet per year, or who are authorized to divert more than 10 acre feet per year under a permit, license, or registration, to measure and report the water they divert. Fusion, a leader in a business-to-business retail environment, is celebrating a major milestone as the company reflects on 25 years of specializing in the supply side of the retail chain, providing clients with the tools and direction needed to build their sales and distribution process. Working with fact-based information and data and combining it with marketing has come a long way since Fusion's doors first opened 25 years ago, according to Stephen Murrow, founder and president of Fusion. He says they believe that by combining the science and art of marketing with strong client relationships, you can develop successful clients, programs, and campaigns. He is proud of the pivotal role that Fusion has played in introducing fact-based information and marketing into the industry. Established in 1997, Fusion quickly identified the lack of coordination between sales and marketing departments within companies. Recognizing this opportunity, Fusion set out to fuse client sales and marketing teams by using data to drive sales and marketing initiatives and strategies. Fusion simplifies this process with its proprietary and robust tools, making information useful and understandable for all members within an organization, not just the sales and marketing group. Fusion's success at turning a complex into the simplified, actionable results, coupled with strong working relationships, have helped them to earn many accolades, including being recognized as a top 10 retail marketing service company by Retail Tech Insights magazine in 2021. California dairy producers are facing increasing pressure to curb the carbon footprint of their operations. Dairy and livestock producers must cut methane emissions by 40% below 2013 levels by the year 2030. They are currently on pace to hit a reduction of 22% by then, according to the California Air Resources Board. Nonetheless, participants in a recent California Dairy Sustainability Summit said progress is underway and a climate-neutral dairy industry is achievable.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
California dairy producers are facing increasing pressure to curb the carbon footprint of their operations. Dairy and livestock producers must cut methane emissions by 40% below 2013 levels by the year 2030. They are currently on pace to hit a reduction of 22% by then, according to the California Air Resources Board. Nonetheless, participants in a recent California Dairy Sustainability Summit said progress is underway and a climate-neutral dairy industry is achievable. The numbers are in for Washington's 2021 wine grape harvest, and while yields may have suffered, the quality is apparently through the roof. Washington State Wine Commission President Steve Warner says the 21 crop year weather was definitely a factor.
You know, we got off to a really good start. We were really excited about the 21 vintage. And then, you know, we hit that massive heat dome. It's the first time I heard of a heat dome and used in a sentence. But we had up to 4 days of temperatures approaching 118 degrees.
So Warner says from a yield perspective,
that did have an effect, obviously, on berry size. It was, you know, one of the warmest, if not the warmest, growing seasons that we've had on record.
But was it a bit too much?
You know, they did lead to lower yields, but for the quality aspect of it, quality is just off the chart. I mean, obviously, with those smaller berries, those smaller cluster weights, you know, they tend to add to the quality of the wine in many ways. And I have to tell you, I had an opportunity to taste a couple of 21s the other day, and they were fantastic.
Cabernet Sauvignon has been Washington's most produced variety since 2015, and this year came in at 28% of the total crop.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Taylor Charlstrom with a report on how to properly feed soil microbes and keep them from going dormant.
Enhancing the soil microbiome is ever important to the health of the soil for your crop. However, once those microbes are healthy in the soil, they have to stay healthy, and that means they need a labile food source. Without a labile food source, the microbes won't work properly to do their job, or they won't do their job at all. Healy's Dr. Carl Wyant rejoined the show to discuss what types of food sources are necessary for soil microbes.
One thing that these microbes have that's unique is the survival mechanisms. And when microbes are hungry, they go dormant on you. And so they go to sleep, they're waiting to be fed and to be woken back up, because if they're dormant, they're not working. They're asleep on a job, essentially. So they're waiting for that food source. If you can feed them, you can put them back to work in your soil.
Of course, microbes are microscopic, so how is a grower supposed to know if the microbes need to be fed or when they need to be fed at all?
Do I need to feed my microbes? And so you have two options available. Your first option is measuring the amount of food in the soil. So this is carbon-based food. There's a test you can order from a lab called the Active Carbon Test, and that test will tell you, does your soil have low, medium, high amounts of microbial food that's available to keep your microbes working and operating and let you benefit from their activities? The other way you can test to see, do I need to wake up my microbes with a food source, is you can actually test for the amount of microbes that are actually in your soil, so more of a direct measurement. So there's labs that you can send soil to, and they'll actually count out the microbes, the bacteria, and the fungi, and give you a number. Hey, you have medium, low, high. There's some indirect tests of activity, like the Solvito CO2 burst test. The more CO2 being respired out of your soil, they infer back that there's more microbial activity. So measuring the amount of food or measuring the amount of microbes in your soils are a great way to get started to establish that need. And then once you know, hey, I've got to do something to manage my microbes a little bit better, that's when you can make the decision to go for that food source and integrate it into your crop production program.
Once the results from these carbon food tests have been realized, you now know what type of food to feed the microbes. Wyant recommended to go to your local ag retailer and ask them about certain products based on the results of the carbon test.
Just like our diets as human beings, you are what you eat. So there's all kinds of different food sources out there. And there's the same principle that in respect to the microbial foods that are on the market. So you have sugar-based products that are out there. You have microalgae-based food products that are out there. And then you have a whole host of other products. So one thing that trips growers up is saying, well, I want to feed my microbes, but what food source do I need to give them? And that's where you can ask your retailer, whomever is selling you that product, and say, hey, what is in your food source? You know, what does it look like from a dietary perspective? Is it mostly sugar? Is it a well-balanced diet of proteins and lipids and carbohydrates? Or is it some other substance that maybe is not a very good food source? Because one thing that we've seen in this market segment of products is that some products say we feed microbes, but if you actually look at their chemistry of the carbon in the product itself, they really don't do as good of a job as they're claiming. So that's a great conversation to have with your ag retailers. Hey, I need to feed microbes. Tell me more about the carbon chemistry of the product and tell me more about what I'm actually feeding these microbes.
Another physical way to tell whether the microbes in the soil are being fed properly is to tell what their effect is that they're having on the soil in terms of quality.
It's very difficult to see the microbes in the field. I don't care how close you get your head to the soil. You're probably not going to see the bacteria and fungi up that close. But one thing you can look for is the outcome of their activities, and that's healthier soils with better structure, better aggregation and granularity, soils that store more water, and soils that are generally more productive. They do more work in the given growing season because they have a well-fed microbiome and a microbiome that's woken up out of dormancy and showing up for work. So Yeah, it's hard to see. There are lab tests where if you want to test for your microbial activity and get those counts, get those actual quantitative numbers, you can send those off to your local flavor lab and they can get that done for you.
In national agricultural news, the Biden administration has announced $670 million in food assistance in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Agency for International Development will draw down the full balance of the Bill Emerson Humanitarian Trust. USAID will use the $282 million from the trust to acquire U.S. food commodities for Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, and Yemen. USAID will provide $388 million in additional funding through the Commodity Credit Corporation to cover transportation, shipping, handling, and other associated costs. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says America's farmers, ranchers, and producers are uniquely positioned through their productivity and through the Bill Emerson Humanitarian Trust to help. The trust is a special authority renamed for Congressman Bill Emerson in 1998 that enables USAID's Bureau for Humanitarian Assistance to respond to unanticipated food crisis abroad when other resources are not available. This is the first time since 2014 the U.S. government has used the Emergency Funding Authority. The war in Ukraine has altered trade, production, and consumption patterns so significantly that global commodity prices will keep rising in 2022 and remain at high levels through the end of 2024, according to a commodity outlook from the World Bank. If the war is prolonged, the prices could go even higher or become more volatile. Overall, this amounts to the largest commodity shock we've experienced since the 1970s. As was the case then, the shock is being aggravated by a surge in restrictions in trade of food, fuel, and fertilizers, according to Indermit Gill, the World Bank's Vice President for Equitable Growth, Finance, and Institutions, in a recent news release. The World Bank is an international organization that attempts to fight poverty by offering financial assistance to middle and low-income countries. The report argues there are two reasons why this commodity price shock will be different than previous ones. The first is that there are fewer substitutes for the most affected energy commodities because price increases have been broad-based across all fuels. Second, the price increases of some commodities are driving up prices of other commodities, like higher natural gas prices, raising fertilizer prices, and putting upward pressure on agricultural prices. Global fertilizer expenses surged 80% last year on supply disruptions, soaring input costs, and trade restrictions in China and Russia. The World Bank projects fertilizer prices to rise almost 70% in 2022 before easing some in 2023. Farm bill discussions are continuing, and there is a lot of discussion on what should be in the conservation title of the next farm bill. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
Conservation could receive the most focus of any of the farm bill titles, as a new one is being crafted at this time. What with growing areas of emphasis such as climate-smart agriculture? A recent panel was asked what they thought would be the most important part of a 2023 farm bill conservation title. Former Farm Service Agency Administrator Jonathan Kappas believes what is needed is creativity.
A chance to start looking beyond some of the basics that we have done over and over and over, and really start to rethink some of the things, particularly around conservation and the challenges at the farm level.
Another former FSA official, Lynn Chiersma, says new and existing offerings in the conservation title must
incentivize rather than penalize.
Reharvest Dan Yeoman says along the lines of incentives, it's not about the amount of funding for farm bill conservation titles, but how that funding is distributed.
Put $100 million or 100 million metric tons of carbon, and we will pay for verified outcomes and then let the market decide how to most efficiently get those.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
American Trucking Association President and CEO Chris Spear issued a statement on the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration's notice of intent for a rulemaking on speed limiters for commercial vehicles. He said ATA is pleased that the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is pursuing a constructive, data-driven approach to the issue of truck speed limiters in its proposal. He says they intend to thoroughly review the FMCSA's proposal, and they look forward to working with the agency to shape a final rule that is consistent with our policy supporting the use of speed limiters in conjunction with numerous other safety technologies.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Sierra Paul-Hemus joins us now with a report on a USDA study improving traceability of foodborne illnesses.
It is estimated by the FDA there are 48 million cases of foodborne illnesses each year. Dr. Jim Bono and Dr. Maggie Weinroth conducted a study in hopes to assist in facilitating the traceability of foodborne illnesses during an outbreak. Dr. Bono has been a member of the Agricultural Research Service, or ARS, for 21 years, and during the study he was a PI in the lab and focused on why foodborne illnesses tracing needed to be researched. Dr. Weinroth is currently a biologist at the National Poultry Center, but at the time of the study was a postdoctoral student. When developing the study, the team focused on solving a way to trace the bacteria from people who are getting sick to the food source. Thanks to the grant funded by the Foundation for Meat and Poultry Research and Education, this was possible.
The main goal of the study was to understand how E. coli 0157H7 changed in a cattle feedlot to be able to understand the genetics associated with the bacteria in the hopes of informing foodborne outbreaks.
The team was using data from a feedlot to look for changes in the genetics compared to the bacteria found in food. They were hoping this data will allow them to understand how fast bacteria and viruses change and how they accomplish it so fast.
Scientists at the U.S. MARC feedlot have been isolating. So they've been, what they would do is they would go into the feedlot, usually from cattle feces, and they would use some microbiological techniques to grow up specific bacteria that was E. coli 0157H7. And then through some other microbiological techniques, they were able to confirm that that was the case. They then put them back in the freezer. And then when we came along and conducted the study, we took, 181 of those different bacteria out of the freezer, and we grew them up. And then we extracted their DNA. So pretty much what you do is you beat up the bacteria until the cell bursts, and then the DNA is left into a liquid, and we pull that DNA out. Then through something called next-generation sequencing, we actually looked at the nucleotides that made up that bacteria in that specific order. So then we used a lot of computer science techniques to kind of understand those changes. So one of them was we took all of the little pieces of bacteria, nucleotides, and we glued them back together like a puzzle so we could see bigger pieces. So that was called assembling the bacterial genome together. It was just kind of putting together the pieces again. And then what we did is we took all those pieces and we aligned them to each other. So we were able to say, we lined them kind of all up in a line and said, what differences are there? And we were able to say, okay, in this position, there used to be a T, but now there's an A.
Putting all these pieces together was just the beginning of their research. In the ARS arm, or research sector, of the USDA, the team was working hand-in-hand with people regulating foodborne illnesses outbreaks to understand what changes were taking place. Working in microbiology, molecular biology, and computer science, the team was addressing a specific question.
Question that we were looking at, and that is, a lot of the traceback has changed from one technology to another. And currently, they're using whole genome sequencing, which means that they're using sequencing to look at everything that's found within a genome. So all of the genetic material, so that's the chromosome, and in the case of bacteria, we have plasmids and other elements. And so what they'll do is they'll sequence isolates, strains, and then they deposit them into a national database that's publicly available. It's hosted by the National Institutes of Health. And there, those sequences get analyzed to see how closely related they are to one another. And so what this provides is a greater resolution of strains than the previous technology.
In answering this question, it would help uncover the relativeness between the strains. Working in the feedlot and collecting data since 1997, the team was able to look at several generations of growth. Upon looking at over 20 years of the data, a few small changes were noticed.
It changed about 2 base pairs a year, which doesn't really sound that big, but when you look at 22 years, all of a sudden that's a pretty big difference. And those differences can help you understand where the bacteria has actually comes from, because as they change over time, you can see, oh, maybe it came from this location because it has the same pattern of change.
And another thing that we were able to observe is that those isolates, the rate at which they changed were different. So they all didn't change at the same rate, which is interesting when you think of an evolutionary context.
Like in every study, there are certain variables that make the research successful. In this study conducted by Dr. Bono and Dr. Weinroth, 2 important things to note are the strain of bacteria they study does not make cattle sick, and the feedlot they were looking at is closed. Dr. Bono goes into more detail on this.
Is it this particular E. coli, this 0157H7, does not make cattle sick? It seems to be a normal flora and is part of the reservoir, where unlike humans, where if we catch it, it could cause some disease in us. The other thing that made this study really interesting is the fact that our feedlot has been closed. And what we mean by closed, and that is there hasn't been any introduction of cattle from outside of our center. So all the calves that are born on our center are then placed into our feedlot. And so what that allowed us to look at was, it turned out we only had 4 different strains over the 22 years that we looked at. And in fact, for the past 8 years, it's been a single clone. And so that's helped, because that's allowed us to go back and look at this particular strain over the last 12 years.
The ARS, working under the USDA, is constantly working to take steps to improve the traceability of foodborne illnesses. This is Sierra Palhemus with My Ag Life.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.